younger clientele in that one, so I've switched gears a little bit, but I'm very happy to be here. I'm from Boscobel originally and still back again. So that's probably about it. I've got two children, both living in La Crosse. So.
I'm Steve Wetter from Boscobel.
What do you do?
I don't do anything.
You're honest.
Yeah. I retired from the military. I had trucks on the road cross country for a number of years. I've been the mayor just with this term here. I'll have 20 years in. Actually got on the city council in 1987. So off and on, I've got 25 years total with aldermen in. I need to hang this crap up. So anyway, that's what I do.
I'm Crystal Riley. I live, I was in Fenimore. I've just moved to Cuba City. I'm the administrative assistant here, so I do payroll and a bunch of other stuff that I can't think of because I've been running around all morning. And I take the minutes for all the board meetings. So,
yeah. I'm Vicki Hirsch. I'm from Platteville, Wisconsin, and I'm retired from the superintendent of schools secretary for, I worked for the school about 25 years, and worked for Dick's Supermarket before that. Married, and I'm an unpaid caregiver for my folks and my husband who battles cancer. John and I have 8 children, 13 grandchildren, and that's about it.
I don't know where to start. I'm Shirley Pink from the Lancaster area. I taught in the Lancaster schools. I retired after 41 years of teaching. I've been retired for 18 years. We do a lot of community service in the area. My husband and I, we work together. We're a big part of the thrift shop and other community activities. We have a severely handicapped daughter that lives in La Crosse. She's in the Wisconsin CARES in a REM home. I'm very interested in what's going here all the time because I follow it very closely. I want to know all about the programs, and we're in the midst of some changes with her, and it just keeps us busy going from one thing to another all the time. It doesn't seem like I'm retired. I'm always getting calls. Because I know a week ago every day I had some place that I had to go and serve or help out. But we do enjoy that type of work.
Joe tries to get in trouble and you keep him out of it, right?
That's about right. That's about right.
Okay, I'm Mary Lou Bausch. I was in my other life physical therapist, and I'm still working at the hospital, hit or miss.
In your other life,
but
there.
I retired in 2010, but I still, so 48 years as a physical therapist and still working. And we have 3 children, 7 grandchildren, and that kind of keeps us busy because they're getting into the age of sports and dance. And it is very interesting because I'll tell you, my oldest granddaughter is 16 going to Holman. She's a sophomore. And one of her classmates committed suicide here just about 2-3 months ago now. And it hit that school, I think, pretty hard, even though it's a big school, about 1,200 kids in that school. And she is on the dance team. So she and 2 of her girlfriends that are on the dance team of the same age did an interpretive dance to a song that is spoken on bullying. This death was because of bullying. And they have performed it at high school. And during the month of May now, they are going to be performing it for every... what do they call it when all the kids get together?
Assembly.
The assembly. They're going to be performing it for every class. But the mental health group of the state of Wisconsin must be holding some kind of a meeting up there within the next couple of weeks or something. And from the high school, they have been asked to use that number and dance it as the opening of that particular conference. So I think those types of things for all of us as we worry about our older people... We need to keep our eyes on our younger people as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, welcome everybody. Public comment.
The only thing I had done was the building update, because there has been some more progress made there. So I think when we left after the last meeting, I don't know if we've gone over the proposals, but we told you we were going to be reviewing proposals from architects, four or five?
Four
architects and then one developer. And we did that. It's an all-day process. Very interesting, and I think we had really all good candidates, but the committee then, or that executive committee then narrowed it down to a couple, and then we kind of came back and they took that to the executive committee and picked an architect. What the feeling is right now, and what the board approved yesterday, is to move ahead with the architect firm of Potter Lawson, and that is to simply look at the schematics and program design. So still not necessarily choosing a building or a building site or anything like that, but looking, they'll come in and work with staff here and staff at social services and the sheriff's office and jail to determine what our programming needs are and do some design elements around that, what we need, our space needs and things like that. Do you want to say more to that? And then Kurt from the Samuels Group, who's been working with the board all along to kind of facilitate the whole master plan and look at this, is on board to help with that too, because Kurt is very good at asking those questions that I don't know enough to ask, because he's been through this a lot, so kind of keeping the process on track. And he, I think it's in his intent to meet with all of those meetings. And be a part of those as well. So,
and part of the programming will be to go back and look at the existing facilities. I think we did a study 5 years ago about this building, and it was basically replace it, but we didn't know where. And if we wanted to include Unified, well, Unified is happy with their building that was built 15 years ago. But part of the programming will be to go back in. We had a brief study done on the jail and some possible updates just to fix some problems, but it wasn't really to get us into the future. This firm will then go back in and look at the jail and the sheriff's department and assess that. If it is possible, maybe to upgrade that facility at that location without being a big problem for relocation, that may be a possibility. Or the projected site out here where maybe all three could be built. But by the middle of the summer, we should have that programming done, the research done, a design drawn up, more accurate information on pricing so that we can go back and compare that with Dave Bainbridge's proposal for another building to house basically what's in here.
That house that sits by the jail, does the county own that? That sits all kind of by itself around the parking lot?
The county, no.
No?
The county does not own any homes.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of his name. He works for the highway department. That owns that little house. Ron Weish. Used to be married to Tina, or was it Turner? The guy that used to own the Ford garage, his daughter was married to him. Ron Whitish. Owns that house. And then Donnie Bennett owns the car wash.
Sure.
The other house. If all that property was bought up by the county, there'd be 4.5 acres there that we own. Because we own the vacant lots south of the jail and the old building that needs to be torn down this summer. Because the roof's flying. The wind the other day, it was up about 2 feet. So that building's got to get out of there. So there's enough room to relocate or add on to the jail, but the biggest problem is what do you do in the middle of construction? But they're supposed to analyze all that. So again, by the middle of summer, we should have some idea if we're going to spend $25 million or if we're going to spend $10 million.
Big decisions.
Yep.
as I go up to Prairie and watch them tearing those houses down along the road. Is it going to make that, you know? Yeah. Going to be under construction for a while, but I'm sure it'll all be great.
That's an $18 million project up there within 3.5 miles.
Yeah.
On a nice road that was already smooth, and I have to drive a bumpy one every day to work. I was complaining about that the other day as I left Prairie. I'm like, it's still going, it's still smooth. They're going to tear it all off, and I drive the worst road.
The president of Potter Lawson, Eric Lawson, was at our meeting yesterday. Kurt Berner was there yesterday, and hopefully within a couple weeks, the initial kickoff meetings will happen. So by next month, we should have some ideas. Like I say, hopefully by 12 and 13 weeks down the road, we'll know where we're at.
Yeah. Well, I applaud you for continuing to work. That is not an easy...
It's not going to fix itself.
No.
When I got on the board in 2004, I think about the third committee meeting that I attended at law enforcement, we finally decided to abandon the regional jail because they had done a study for like 4 years to have five counties go into a jail. Everybody wanted it, but they all wanted it in their county.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so they finally abandoned it. That was 15 years ago. We haven't done anything since.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions on the building update? Okay, go on to edits and reports. What?
I'm just telling Misha she can come in and sit down a minute.
Okay, advocacy report on activities. The regional meeting, Shirley.
Wow. Funny, she was there too, right, Shirley?
That's right. When I don't touch on, you can.
Okay.
Okay? I guess we're going to apply... I don't guess, but they're going to apply for a federal grant so that we can have yoga for seniors. They've done some studies on that as a result of a meeting, and that's going to be done because they've seen the advantages of yoga. There's lots of results that have been done as far as the ADRCs on a survey, and I thought that survey that we were given at our meeting was excellent. The ADRCs are reporting to get part of the federal dollars, the strongest part of tracking each month to encourage more consistency in the ADRCs. They have to keep track of everything that, on how many minutes, and that has to be handed in monthly.
Time and reporting.
Encouraging more consistency, and there's just, it was so interesting to read what each county was reporting for each month as far as abuse and neglect, adaptive equipment, caregiving, health promotion, or just transportation. It just was a great number of tallies that are sent in each month, and to compare what's being done in Grant, Green, Lafayette, Iowa.
For the two new board members, the ADRC portion, we have lots of different funding parts. Most of it, half of it is mostly Older Americans Act, which was the original aging programs that were here. Then ADRC came in with state funding, which works its way through from the feds as well, but and that is actually, we're part of a regional ADRC, so it's kind of unique for a county department to be part of a regional program as well. So the ADRC portion of this has a regional component to it too, and has Grant, Iowa, Lafayette, and Green as part of that. So that's why we have a regional board report, and I think Pat...
Yes, I'm on.
Maybe you were
elected
to the regional board.
Yes,
so.
I'm on.
So you'll be getting to know about that
okay.
even more. So that gets a little confusing sometimes, so I just wanted to kind of point that out. But the Older Americans Act programs were geared just at seniors, and that's county levy is put into those programs. The ADRC is geared to seniors, but also individuals with disabilities between the ages of 17 and a half and 59 as well, and that does not have any county levy money in it. So when you see the finance report, it's a kind of, you know, all put together, but just so you know that the levy that the tax levies support those older American Sacs, because we just don't get enough funding from them to run the program.
So you have a packet for each one of these?
Yes, we're going to go through some of that. And actually, I said they're hitting it well, because we're starting with the programmers, you know, the staff coming in and talking about their programs. So we're going to be doing that over the course of several
meetings. Even for those of us that I think that have been on this committee for a while, it gets kind of mind-boggling as to where the money comes in, where the money goes out, and who it affects, so forth and so on.
And I just told Dan there's still acronyms I don't know. So if we say something that you don't understand, please ask.
There's no.
There's a lot of acronyms out there in this world.
But it is interesting what's going on, and I think there will be more consistency in the programs of the ADRCs of the four counties.
Right.
As a result.
And the state.
The state did a big survey of customers and found very high satisfaction results with those customers from ADRC. So that was good. But the other thing is what they found out, we were in kind of a... it was a perceived jeopardy anyway when the governor's budget came out that they were going to get rid of ADRCs, and so there was a lot of push to get ADRCs reporting consistent numbers so that we could again then show those numbers in talk about the data that we have to legislators in a way that is beneficial to us, that you know we are necessary out here and we do good things out here. But we weren't always producing that kind of data that could show those results. So the state's very big on making sure that that's happening and having consistency, especially in our regions. And we've still got a ways to go on that, because I think we are still doing some things. Weesh and I just had to talk about that yesterday. So we think we're missing some calls, so we're trying to make sure that we're capturing all the data that we need. So that's where some of that's coming from the regional board.
Anything more, Shirley?
Not unless someone has some questions, or if they want to see the results of that survey, I have it all here. It's very interesting. You can spend quite a bit of time going through it and comparing what's happening.
Two of the main things I think that came out of the survey that they did was people who have the highest satisfaction levels that we've worked with are the ones that have usually, that we've gone out to their home. Our staff does home visits with people. And meets them in their own home. And that usually has shown those are the most satisfied customers when they've had an opportunity to have staff come out and meet with them. Because that provides them, I think, two things. The staff gets a feel for what they're really dealing with in that home and maybe what their issues are, much better sense of than when they're sitting in an office telling them. And then the other thing would be when staff do follow up with people, that also has a very... high level of satisfaction from other consumers. When staff, we wait a few weeks and say, okay, Steve, did you get that packet of information I sent, or did you talk to this agency, or is there more help that we can be assistance for? So,
Could you elaborate for the new members the part that the ADRC played in getting the new things that Walker signed into law regarding...
Oh, the dementia care?
Yeah.
One of the things that came out of when Governor Walker's budget came out and actually was kind of calling for the elimination of ADRCs, the ADRCs grouped together very, very quickly and did a lot of talking with their legislators and legislators actually became very interested in what we were doing and in what services we were providing. They really didn't have a really good handle on that. Other than they thought we just enrolled people into Medicaid and things like that, which, in their mind, just costs more. So in talking about that, one of the things that came out of that is the dementia programs that we offer. And we have a dementia care specialist in our region that works with people and with groups. And because of that, a couple of legislators became very, very interested because they had... relatives or they knew people that had dementia. It was very close to their own hearts. And they pulled together a dementia task force to go around the state and talk about dementia and what was needed, how it was affecting people, what services people needed. And it was really very, very powerful. And we were lucky enough that they hosted one in Dodgeville. And Nate Druckmann and I, Nate is the sheriff for the county, spoke at that one about a concern that we have out here. During this last year, we had had some problems where a person with dementia needed some temporary placement, and we did not have a facility available to take them. You cannot detain someone as, say, you can with somebody with mental health concerns. If someone has mental health concerns, the sheriff's department, they can do an emergency detention and place them in Winnebago or somewhere. You cannot do that when a person has a diagnosis of dementia. That's against the law. However, each county is supposed to have like a temporary, like 3-day emergency placement for someone. Most counties don't, because quite frankly, there are not facilities available to do that. And facilities are hesitant to do that. And I understand it, because you don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes people with dementia can become very violent. Sometimes they can be wanderers. So there's a lot of risks of that. So we spoke about that issue that we had, and that was a problem for us. So that was one of the bills that came out of it. So 10 bills came out of this task force that went to the Assembly and were all passed, and then went on to the Senate. Three or four of those bills actually came out in law this past year, and one of them was on the emergency detention. The other one was to train mobile crisis units about dementia and be more familiar with dementia, which is great news for us, because we need them to understand the aspects of that. The third one was caregiver services, expanding the caregiver programs. We do not have, there's two different caregiver programs. We have a national caregiver support program that works with anybody who is a caregiver, essentially. And then there's a specific Alzheimer's caregiver support program that is actually run through the Department of Social Services that deals with people whose loved one has dementia and they're caregivers. So they are expanding that. Hopefully, we don't know how much money that's going to amount to, but we're hoping that they'll have more of that. And I think there's one more, and I'm missing it, and I can't think of it. Two of the bills had to do with the emergency caregiver. What's the other one? I said the crisis unit. What was it? Did I talk about last one? I'm missing the other one. What was it? A little comes to me.
But it's interesting that they were going to try to get rid of the ADRC, and yet they were a very big part of getting these bills forward.
And I think the legislator really saw a good use of the ADRC, and legislators started calling us for help because they had constituents calling them that maybe were in need, and they found out that the ADRC was a good place to go for a constituent in need, and they started giving us a call. I mean, we have an excellent relationship now, I think, with Howard Markline and Travis Tranel. Howard in particular has been a big supporter of us.
What is it, Novak?
Novak, yeah, Representative Novak. He was actually on the Dementia Task Force. It was great. The one thing that I really noticed at those Dementia Task Force public hearings was they really took the time to listen to people. I've been to a lot of public hearings, and a lot of times you see legislators and they're on their phone and they're texting and they kind of wander in and out, and you know, sometimes they're listening really intently and sometimes they're off doing something else, and they never really moved. They sat there the whole time, and I've never been to one where they asked so many questions of the people that were speaking. In fact, I was taken off guard by that, because I didn't know I was going to be asked a lot of questions, and they really wanted to make sure that they, you know, had a handle on it, and I think they came out of that, you know, feeling like they did, and feeling like there was some really good services out here, but there was a lot more need for services to people with dementia. And if you look at the statistics anymore, with this aging population, I mean, I think it's now 1 out of 6 or 1 out of 5. So you go around the table here. That's a little
scary.
And we're seeing younger. I mean, we've had clients in the past year that have been in their 50s. So when I jokingly say that I can't remember things, there might be a real reason for it. But you know, that is frightening that we are seeing lower and lower. You know, so we definitely need those services. We are lucky enough to have a dementia care specialist on our staff as part of the region. We wrote a grant. Mary wrote a grant. Mary Mesra is our regional director, and she wrote a grant a couple of years ago. So we actually have a dementia care specialist that not only meets with consumers that come in that have concerns, but she's also going out into the communities and helping develop dementia-friendly communities, working with businesses.
That grant, does that pay for that dementia specialist? Mm-hmm. And then when that runs out? It's over.
So far they've extended it. They've extended it now twice. So hopefully, I think, you know, as part of that grant, they wanted to, that was one of the bills, was to expand that program statewide.
To some of the areas are really looking for that dementia care specialist, like we have.
So far, Whitney has, like, she's worked with Platteville Police Department and trained them. The Sheriff's Department has been trained. She did, her and Ruth did a group with the university students.
My people have been trained.
Have your people been trained?
No.
Not yet, no. Okay. But we will get on that. We've kind of been concentrating in Platteville right now, getting several businesses there trained. There's been a big push to do dementia-friendly community in Platteville. Fenimore is also interested, and I know Boscobel is too, so we will be expanding those. So it's a good thing. It really is. I mean, there's just no one around that's not going to be touched by this, so it's a good thing. And yeah, that all came out of basically a desire just to get out there and spread the word about what ADRCs do. So
advocacy.
Yes.
Okay. How about the Family Care 2.0 concept maker?
Just to let you know, Family Care is long-term care in Grant County in this region that people do qualify, and Leisha can talk more intelligently about that, and we'll talk kind of how she deals with long-term care. But Family Care is one of the programs that people who are financially eligible and functionally eligible for can go into. Right now, Continuous is the family care provider in Grant County. We have a new provider coming in called Care Wisconsin. Again, as part of the governor's budget, there was kind of an overhaul of the family care program, which was a little bit surprising since the family care program has kind of been shown to save taxpayer money in terms of it's keeping more and more people out of the nursing homes and at-home care. And it's really showing to have a significant savings. However, sometimes you still fix what isn't broke, I guess. So they looked at it and wanted to make some changes to it. The state was required to do a concept paper on what family care would look like down the line, and they have released it to the legislators. Joint Finance will now have to look at it and go from there. One of the concerns that we had, because originally in the governor's budget, ADRCs were sort of being, you know, phased out or were going to look very differently. But one of the things I just wanted to point out was part of the concept paper is to keep ADRC local. They do realize the need for that, so it has been recommended. If anybody wants a copy of the full paper, I have it, so I'll give it to you if you're interested in it. But the main thing that we were concerned about was keeping ADRCs local. There's more talk about the number of, you know, we're going to be going to integrated health providers and what are those going to look like. There's a number of, they were going to break it into three regions in the state for long-term care, and whether it goes to three or five, some of that will be up for decisions. But it'll be interesting.
Well, my daughter-in-law, you know, works for, like, our Southwest Opportunities Only. It's Riverfront up there in La Crosse.
And where my daughter works.
She tells me one of the things that they're seeing, and I'm not sure how this all fits together, is that some of these agencies that are helping these people are pulling back cares. And the idea there, she says, is instead of taking them out into the public, they just think it's okay just leave these disabled people at home, where the concept not too many years ago was to get these people out. So is, I mean,
yeah.
Can you explain
that? I think...
Does it make sense?
No. And And my daughter actually works for your daughter-in-law, so right now in between her other jobs. There has been a push. Southwest Opportunity Center, Hodan Center are two agencies around here that work with a lot of individuals with disabilities, and they provide what used to be called a sheltered workshop way back in the day when I was in other agencies. Now they call it like community service workshops. They provide, you know, where these people can come in and work for a day. However, I don't know if it's Medicaid or where if it's coming from. Dave, you might know that better. New things coming out through CMS or through the Center of Medicaid are saying that they want these people placed more out into the general public, into jobs, rather than keeping them all in one spot. The concept, I think, is good in terms of it would be really nice if, you know, Johnny could go work at Quick Trip for 4 hours a day and be in the general public versus a sheltered workshop or a workshop where he's with, you know, just only certain people. In theory, I think it's a good idea. In practice, I think it's very difficult, especially out here, to implement. We just don't have a lot of those employers and maybe businesses that are able or willing to do that necessarily. And I shouldn't say not willing, but able to do that always. Transportation becomes more of a difficulty in doing that because... and they do some of that. Hodan and Southwest Opportunities both do transport people to some individual jobs. But they would like to do that almost entirely. And I think what will happen is people will spend more time at home and not do as much as they would as, say, coming out to the workshop. We just had a consumer in here the other day that their services were being pulled back. He wasn't able to go out to the center as much as he wanted. That's a concern, I think. I'm not sure that I don't believe that the family care providers are doing that because they necessarily think it's a good idea. I think there's pressure for them to do that. And like I said, in theory, the integration into, you know, just your everyday businesses that are out there is good, but I'm afraid it's going to backfire out here in rural America where these people aren't going to have anything then. You know, if they can't go to SOC or they can't go to Hodan, they're going to be sent at home.
I have an illustration to that point. A friend of mine has a disabled daughter. She's Downs and she's 38. And she got a job here in Lancaster. And she was so proud of it. She got fired because she talked to people while she swept the floor. And the devastation that girl, it was just awful. She just cried for days and days and days, and her mom could not explain to her why they did that, you know, and her comprehension's not there. But she talked to people while she swept the floor. So it was very, very harmful.
I think there is a need still for a place for them to come to sometimes, because otherwise I think they will be sitting home alone, and that's not productive in any way.
I was just going to say, it seems
people
like
need
it's
a purpose in life, and they need to get
all.
Out and socialize, and a lot of them really enjoy that. You know, there's a lot of great things going on, and they're certainly pushing that at the 17.5 level, so the students coming out of the school systems with disabilities, they're making really great strides there with, say, the secondary schools provide a better environment for them to come to. I think, like, Southwest Tech and all these secondary schools have done a great job of integrating students now who maybe in the past weren't able to go on to secondary school. So I think as that happens and they're making more inroads with employment, it will be good, but if they just draw a line in the sand and say, okay, from now on you have to be placed somewhere, it's going to take care managers an awful long time to find those integrated employment options for people, because there are just not that many out there.
There's too many individual differences. Each case has to be evaluated,
and it takes a certain kind of business to be able to do that. It takes a certain kind of supervisor to be able to do that. You know, it's certainly in
communication.
Theory,
communication's a big title.
In theory, it's a good thing, but your daughter-in-law knows in practice it's not really all that helpful.
Yeah,
so.
It's true because I mean it's these people come to them and, or their family members, as you're saying, come to them and just.
Mm-hmm. But I think in saying that. In pointing the finger at continuous or the family care providers saying they're pulling back, I don't know that it's necessarily them pulling back. It's coming
from the top
from the top down, and I'm sure that you know they're only able to provide services and what they're getting paid to provide services for too. So I mean,
okay. Yeah. Any further questions? Thanks for explaining that.
They just all need to work together. Is what has to be. I mean. You can't expect the ones up here to be doing it all. You got to put some initiative into it, too.
Yeah, it's, you know, we have some wonderful people that come from SFC and do some facility cleaning here. And, I mean, they're fantastic.
I know they clean at our church.
I love to see them every week.
At our church twice a week, and those people are so proud of what they do. I mean,
we just hired a crew to do the bathrooms at the administration and the courthouse.
They're very proud of the work that they do.
And everybody needs a purpose in life. They really do. So yeah, I'm at the same time, I'm hoping that they just don't dismantle these community programs thinking that it all has to be out, because it's going to take a lot of inroads to get people, you know, and some of the employers are very good, but still, there's a lot of consideration there for smaller businesses and things to take on that. So
great, thanks. All right, number 7, the INA presentation.
Well, Leisha is here. One of the things we talked about last month, and it kind of worked out now since we have two new board members, and Vicki's relatively new as well, was to kind of bring staff that are working with our consumers back in to talk about what they do and just give a real brief overview of it. So I started with information and assistance. Alicia Lenz is our information and assistance lead here. And information and assistance is kind of when people walk in the door or make that first phone call, they will usually interact with an information and assistance specialist first, and then they may go on to our other programs. But typically, they're kind of the gateway, other than Mariah and Sarah out there answering the phones. But they kind of send them on to information assistance specialists. So if you want to talk about that. And I'm going to run out because I forgot something on my agenda, so I'm not ignoring you. I'll be right back. But you can go ahead and get started.
That's okay.
I should probably listen to what she does, too, so I know. So
as you say, I'm an information assistance specialist, and we're kind of the gateway into services and supports. People may call into our agency looking at what kind of supports they can have in their home to keep them home, what kind of services they can bring in, what kind of things that they can help their parent, their loved one, themselves on to help them either stay in the home or look at other long-term care options. So when we get calls in, we have a rotation on intake days. There's usually from 8 to 4:30, there should always be somebody here that can answer questions about those things. They shouldn't really ever get a voicemail unless all three of us are tied up. There's three of us, information assistance specialists, and we cover each other's breaks throughout the day. So we provide information assistance here. We also go out to the people's homes and then to nursing homes and hospitals to talk to individuals about what services and supports they can have there in their home. We talk about supportive home care. We talk about medical alert devices, home delivered meals, transportation. We talk about all these different services. We look at each individual person and look at what kind of things will be best able to kind of fit into their needs. We also make internal referrals to the caregiver support program and to the benefits specialist. So if like someone has a lot of questions about how to apply for disability and how to go through that process of applying for disability, we make a referral to the elderly benefits specialist or the disability benefits specialist. We are the entryway into long-term care funding, like Family Care and IRIS, as she has mentioned, that she talked briefly about the Family Care and Family Care program. There's two, right now there's a managed care organization that runs Family Care in Grant County, and it's continuous. Come June 1st, we will have Care Wisconsin running the Family Care program as a second choice for long-term care option for Family Care. The other program in Grant County is IRIS, and it stands for Include, Respect, I, Self-Direct. It's a self-directed supports program. People who may want to hire their own family member or friend to provide supportive home care or to do different chores or activities with them or for them, they can do that through the IRIS program. Any questions so far?
What do you mean when you say long-term care will be connected to, what was the other one that you said before that, and starting June 1st?
June 1st, there is another long-term care program called Care Wisconsin.
There, yeah.
So after June 1st, people will have a choice between two managed care organizations, Continuous and Care Wisconsin. And they both will run the Family Care program in this the Southwest region. So it'll be they're running through Grant, Green, Iowa, and Lafayette, but also they would do the Northern Eco Country, Richland, Crawford, Juneau, and Sauk.
The Family Care program surely is the one where you had to be functionally eligible as well as financially eligible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
you do the functional screens, correct?
That is correct.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my question.
Yeah, and Care Wisconsin, well, how's that going to change? You said they're connected?
I don't understand. They'll just be two. So if you're going to lunch and you decide between McDonald's and Hardee's, they both offer fast food. It's kind of the same thing. Now, if you're eligible to go on long-term care, you're going to have a choice between Continuous and Care Wisconsin. They both basically offer the same types of services and provide the same services. They're just two separate agencies.
So one must offer something different than the other. Why would there be two?
Well, because the state wants competition.
Oh.
That's why they're out there.
Well, who decides which one they take? Or
they decide.
They have to decide.
Oh, the individual has
yes.
to decide?
Yes, we have to make sure we are very unbiased in that decision.
So it's kind of flip a coin.
Yeah.
So the INAs will present the information. Now, we are thinking, because we've never had competition in this before. We've only had Continuous, so your choice was Continuous or IRIS.
Right.
And so we are trying to get a little bit more of information as to how we will present that.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that they will have some different providers, so they may offer a different provider as far as home care services than, say, Continuous does. And we think we might be able to tell them, okay, here's the provider that they use, here's the provider that Continuous uses.
Right.
And
but they all have to offer the same services. I mean,
they
right.
all basically
yeah.
have to offer
right.
the same
yeah.
services.
They have the exact same benefit package
right.
For both the nursing home level care and non-nursing home level care. So the benefit package is exactly the same. So they may have different providers. So if someone's currently using a provider, like maybe let's say, for example, Homeward Bound. So if someone's currently using Homeward Bound and one of them contracts with Homeward Bound and the other one doesn't, then you can tell them,
right.
might be able to tell them that, yeah.
So you're saying that they have to have the same, they both have to have the same, and that's by state statute, no doubt.
Right.
Or it can be that, or better.
Yes, they could. It is possible that one could offer a few more services than the other. And it'll depend on their.
That's how you get ahead of the competition.
Capitation
yeah.
rates and things like
yeah.
that. Yeah. So I mean, it's really going to just be a personal choice for an individual. You know, just kind of like you would pick your own clinic, whether you decide you're going to go to this clinic or this hospital or that hospital. You're just going to simply have a choice if you're eligible for Family Care to pick. which one you want.
What is the eligibility criteria?
That we meet the financial and functional eligibility. So with our agency, we do the functional screen assessment. We look at their capabilities on completing activities of daily living and instrumental activities of daily living. So on an activity of daily living, for example, there are bathing, dressing, eating, mobility, transferring, whether or not they can use the bathroom, and then what kind of adaptive equipment they need with doing those tasks. Instrumental activities of daily living are meal preparation, medication management, money management, transportation, and whether or not they can use a telephone. So we look at all those different activities of daily living. We also get a list of diagnoses and health-related services, and we put that all on an assessment and determines a level of care eligibility. And there's two level of care eligibility. There's a nursing home level of care and a non-nursing home level of care. The level of care determines whether or not they're eligible and at what benefit package. Go ahead.
Well, I should do. Are there goals and objectives relative to, I would assume, non-nursing home outcomes?
So,
How does ADRC determine that the programs that are being initiated are being successful by keeping people out of nursing homes? I would assume is that an outcome that you're
the goal is to not have.
And then there's a way of measuring the effectiveness of the programs as you go along that you can.
Right. There are different ways. I'm sure family care measures. Once they're enrolled into the program, how long they're able to stay out of a nursing home. Also part of, they have initiative with trying to relocate people out of the nursing homes with nursing home relocation. So some of them may currently be in a nursing home. We may work with them to get them eligible for a program with the goal of getting them out of the nursing home into either an assisted living or back to their home with some support.
And those successes are somehow documented and there's a record of them.
Right, and actually ADRC, that's a good question, Dan, because ADRC, once we kind of hand it off to family care, we're sort of out of that. However, ADRC is looking at trying to determine, you know, what our projected savings might be is if we keep someone out of the nursing home and make arrangements. We're kind of trying to... It's something they're trying to look at right now is projecting, like, how much in taxpayer savings did we save by even moving them out of Orchard Manor back to their home or whatever the case may be.
And that's track documented. Mm-hmm.
And family care it's very well documented that family care is a less expensive alternative to nursing home care. If any of you had a family member in a nursing home, you know how expensive it is. It's very expensive.
Does Medicaid ever get involved in it? Some point.
Medicaid is part of the process.
Okay.
Do you want to explain the financial eligibility?
Yeah, someone has to meet the financial eligibility or be eligible for Medicaid in order to go into these long-term care programs. So we look at their income and assets to see initially whether or not they'd be eligible. The final eligibility goes to Department of Social Services to determine the financial eligibility, whether or not they're eligible for family or for Medicaid.
And they do need to be eligible for Medicaid in order to be on family care.
Yeah.
The majority of people that we see a lot of the time, there's kind of a misnomer, and that was the problem with the legislators, that's all, they only thought we just put people into long-term care, and that really isn't the case. A lot of people who walk in our door are not going to be financially and or functionally eligible for family care. So we have to help them look at their other options. You know, they may have, you know, they have their own money set aside for their own care, and how do we keep them in their home and provide them with services and help them locate those services that meet their needs, be it transportation, be it meals, be home services.
Right.
So.
As a matter of fact, probably the majority that come in don't qualify for family care.
Right.
But you guys help them out getting the services they need or pointing them in the right direction to get the services.
Exactly. We help, let's say someone needs some home care services set up. They may call and look, want to know what the different costs of the different home care agencies are, and then they ask us to make those phone calls, initial phone calls, to
connect them with the home care agency. So if, let's say they choose one home care agency, we may make that call and have them contact that person to set up an appointment, or assist them with setting that appointment up for them.
And answer your question, Dan. I worked in family care. There's per member per month for people enrolled into the program. So if you were a nursing home level of care, you got a higher dollar amount than you did for a non-nursing home level of care. Then we had to provide those services to that person out in the community or the nursing home or assisted living, whatever that amount was out of those dollars and stuff like that. And we had state oversights. So we had to account for all those dollars, where they went to, how successful we were at making sure we were meeting people's needs. Within the funding that we had. So,
okay.
I don't know if that helps or not.
Yeah, it does. And again, there, my other question or comment was, do you share the successes, the success stories among yourselves or through mm-hmm. the department? Or
we pass our success stories on to our regional manager, who I believe in turn takes it to the state.
Yes.
So
yeah, and the state's looking at trying to quantify our data a little more, and I've got that in my report. I just sat in last week on a phone conference for AERC directors, and they're having us do a business template now. That's what they're calling it. I don't know really why it's called that, but again, back in my Head Start days, we always had studies that said, you know, for every dollar that was invested in this program, it was a savings of $7 down the road. And that's kind of what they're looking at, I think, with ADRC. They're trying to attach some costs per contacts for some of the services so they can say, again, for the amount of money that you put into, say, an information assistance specialist, this is what she's saving you in Medicaid mm-hmm. costs down the line for the number of contacts that she's working with. Because we're keeping people out of nursing homes. We're keeping people in their homes where it's less expensive.
And out of the hospital.
And out of the hospital.
Yes,
and
yeah.
also enhancing the quality of life. Most people do not want to be, you know,
in the nursing home. Right.
Would there be a value in a wider spreading the word or a wider knowledge base of the successes that you do incur to general public through newspaper articles or
absolutely
or some and is. Did we do something like that?
Yeah, we do have a newspaper. We do a newsletter that goes out every other month, and so we do try to broadcast
who gets that.
It comes out of our department right here. It's called the News and Views. It comes out in your shopping news. It's in your shopping news every other month. So look for it. Because you've probably seen it.
Well, those were big stories, I think, that went to your public meetings.
Yes.
A lot of those were given
and
to just show how much these people had.
Because of what the ADRC directors did, and that was really a group of ADRC directors that did that in terms of getting those words out to legislators, because of that amount of publicity they got out to there, the state, I think that's why the state saw this need for this business template now and is really thinking, gosh, we need to use this data in a really positive way. So that is what the state is actually working on now, trying to take all of those numbers and make some sense out of them that will translate to what, you know, the good is that we're doing. We have your individual success stories. We just, you know, yesterday we had our DBS, our disability benefit specialist, won a public hearing for somebody. They've been denied Medicaid insurance and were without insurance for quite some period of time, and she helped them through documentation that they needed to have when an appeal, and it backdated, so she's covered for this. She had huge expenses, and she literally left here in tears. She was so happy that she was like, this is just the first agency that's really just helped me all along the way that I needed to be helped, and we have a lot of that, so yeah. Those experiences do, you know, we do try to capture those and send those on to the state as well. So, I almost every day here we probably have somebody that walks out of here very, very happy. So
we have a lot of successes in just putting those on paper and sending them on.
But legislators want to hear is, how are you saving us
money?
How are you saving us money? So, and rightfully so, they have a right to know that.
Sure.
has
all
this. We do need to get a better, you know, handle on that and getting that word out. But I think word of mouth, as far as what we do, gets out to other people. I think probably the best way that we have found out about marketing our services is oftentimes people heard, well, you know, my neighbor suggested you because you helped their mother, and that's why the reason they make first contact with us. We can put lots of things out there, but oftentimes until people really need us or they have a crisis and somebody says you should contact the ADRC, that's when they contact us.
I always look at this time reporting. Has that slowed you down any with actual time to your... your people that come in? It goes pretty quickly.
It does. It's 15-minute increments, and we just put X's on the different spots that on the spreadsheet where we fit in the different information assistance. We may put that in different slots throughout the day. So, also we do categories of like. Whether it's nursing home, enrollments, transitioning from schools. So we put in the categories on the spreadsheet, too. It goes fairly quickly.
They're required a time report because they can draw down from Medicaid, some reimbursement through Medicaid as well. That supplements our grant dollars then. So that's why they do that. I don't time report, but our INAs, people who work with actual, you know, clients, consumers do time report so that we can draw down more money.
Do you see the workload increasing? If you were to chart it or graph it over the years, are we getting more customers?
I believe so. I know when we first rolled out with ADRC and transitioning people from the community waivers into family care and IRS, we had a big influx of trying to get all those people transitioned. It may kind of went down a little bit after we went through that big spurt of transitioning people from community waivers. But then I believe it's going back up. It seemed like we're getting increases on people just asking us questions, calling into our agency and coming in.
Yeah, do you think it's because the baby boomers are becoming of that age, or the people are living longer, or a little of both?
A little bit of both, yeah.
Statewide, they're seeing a definite. And I think the state's done a better job of starting to market us. It's causing me some concern because, as you heard me say, I've got to send everything with a state logo in it into the state for approval right now. But the state's really looking at trying to market ADRC as a brand and make it well known. And they've done some state commercials in the past year. I don't know if you've seen them, but they were out quite a bit. It's definitely going to become a concern. We have spikes during the year, after the holidays, after Thanksgiving and Christmas, when children come home and see parents who might be failing a little bit more and realize that, oh, you know, we live out of town and what are we going to do? So we often see spikes after that, and they call the ADRC and like, you know, what might be available to my mother and things like that. So there are spikes. But, yeah, I mean, we're expected to see more and more people. Especially out here, we don't have the types of facilities available to people, you know, the assisted living facilities and things like that. There's going to be a lot of people living in their homes, and they're going to be rural and isolated.
And again, that deals with their physical and mental well-being.
Absolutely.
Laura, do you think that the billboards helped, the BDRC billboards, didn't they?
Somewhat. I still think our best marketing is word of mouth. I really think a lot of it comes from word of mouth. I think that's anything.
Yeah. I mean, whether you go to a restaurant or whether you're doing long-term care or whether you're, whether the ADRC, everything's word of mouth. People say they hear of us from friends or family members. Same with, like, if you have a favorite restaurant, people hear about that too. So word of mouth is pretty much everything.
The INAs, and Ruth is our kind of outreach specialist for the ADRC, but we all do it. Go out and speak to groups. We've spoke to Retired Teachers Association. She was just at, I can't think what it was in Potosi the other night, Lions Club maybe. It escapes me which group she was at, but so, you know, we will go out and present to those groups, and oftentimes after one of those presentations,
you know, somebody will pull us aside and say, oh, I have this situation going on, what can you do for us? And, you know, we like, you know, make a call and come on in and we'll talk to you. So, but I myself know, I mean, I was in the same boat with my mom, and it was after, you know, a coworker said, I think you should call the AARC. And I did, and that's kind of how I ended up in the AARC. It was just because of that phone call.
Hope I'm
not asking. Nope, you're fine. That's why we brought her in.
I know you deal with the so you deal with the mental and the physical issues. Is there ever any spiritual? Does that ever become part of it? Can you talk to them about that, or is that against the state laws or whatever?
In terms of,
I'm making a recommendation, or you know, involving the local pastor,
right,
or their.
Well, we do talk to people about like if they're looking for support through the church. We don't recommend one thing over another,
right,
but we do suggest they look to churches for different supports.
Yeah.
A lot of times the food pantries are run through the churches too, and
yeah,
that might be a good connection with with the churches as well.
And I even think Mary Lou's idea where, you know, if you're looking for some kind of an involvement in, you know, in work, you know, that's even a good source of employment. Or
that's a good idea,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. And when they're, I mean, when they work with some, you know, when somebody new comes in, I mean, they are, in trying to determine, help them deal with options, they are looking at what is their support network, who do they have available,
yeah,
to help them in what they do every day. You know, and a lot of times people aren't necessarily ready, and that's what we'd really like, is people to get to know us before they're in a crisis, just to kind of come in and talk to us and find out what we do and maybe what we can help them do at a point. You know, some of them will say, okay, well, I don't think I'm at that point where I want to do this yet, but now I know what's out there. And so when they are at that point, they can give us a call. That's what we'd really like, rather than the
right,
you know, Friday at 3 o'clock and, you know, my they're letting my mom out of the hospital today, and
we don't
think she should go home. And yeah, and it's like, yeah, we don't think she can cook, and we don't, you know, we're...
And you, and you should be somewhere celebrating your successes of the week.
It seems like those calls always come at Friday at like 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Or
yeah.
4:25.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I mean, we would like to get, and we, so, I mean, I think, you know, very clearly the hospitals are very familiar with us, and they do call. They have, our staff go out and meet with the social workers at all the nursing homes. Grand County's got a lot of nursing homes for the size of the county that it is. We've got a lot of nursing home beds. So they meet regularly with those social workers. They go to the hospitals again, you know, when we know there's new staff, to introduce themselves, make us aware of our services. So we sit on a lot of different committees. I sit on a communities and counties on transition with the school districts, so that the school districts are aware of when they've got kids transitioning out of the high schools into adult services, what we have to offer. So we are constantly trying to find, you know, constantly trying to be where people will find us and know about us and utilize us. So
you guys have to know what the resources are so you can tell the people what their options are too.
Absolutely.
And that stuff. But you can't tell them which one to.
No.
You know, this one's much better than this one. You can't do that, Marty.
No,
you got to bite your tongue sometimes.
Yeah. You just have to say, here's eight options. These are what you can pick from. Honestly.
So since the kids can stay in school till they're 21, but yet they're eligible for your services at 17 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that...
Well, and we will have Angela come in and talk more about disability benefits at that time, but they do need... There are some things that need to happen at 17 and a half because they may have been eligible under different rules as a teenager than they are going to be as adults. So they have to reapply for some of, you know, for benefits as an adult.
Okay.
And sometimes some schools are better at letting parents know about that. Sometimes parents are better at knowing about that. But there are kids that fall through the cracks, and all of a sudden I thought we would still be getting this benefit, and now we're not. And
right,
some students aren't going to qualify for disability as an adult. So then what are they going to
yeah,
do?
Okay. I can tell you from family care, we appreciated getting people aware at 17 and a half rather than 18. Here they are. What are you going to do with them type of thing?
Right.
Because then we had time to work with them and see what would benefit them the most and what, you know, we could help them.
Help them
with
the
transitioning
as they're graduating.
Yeah.
Because
so
if you
that's
have
really
a family go a few months without benefits, that's not good. That's right. Now you have lost an income source, and and that can be really detrimental to that family and that child. So
definitely.
So and that can happen. So we are always trying to get in there, in the door.
Okay. Anybody have more questions? Is there anything more for us?
Did you get through everything that you had?
I don't really have much. I just gave some meter reference in case I've had something. But
so and then I don't know how much you said, but then you know we have all this in-house agents. The in-house programs that we do too. So, like, if she's working with somebody who she also knows is a caregiver, then she will usually pull in Ruth, who runs our caregiver program, into that mix too, and say, "Hey, you know, we'd like to share with you about the programs that we have here too." So
yeah, and we've done joint client appointments with or consumer appointments with other people here in the agency. So like, I'd go out to someone's home that may be a caregiver. I'd be looking at services for the individual. Ruth may look at the services for the caregiver. So, yeah.
When we get the program reports, I think that'll help too, seeing
yes.
where the referrals and
yeah.
where they go to and that. So.
Yeah, they stay pretty busy. So, yeah.
Do you work with CESA at all? Do you have
that's the committee that I sit on. Is
okay.
CESA is running that committee, and that works with youth in transition. In fact, we have two big events coming up this month. Opportunity Knox is an event just for youth, and it's kind of like a pared down elder fest. instead of a senior fair, it's kind of a little bit of a resource fair for kids still in high school with disabilities. Several of the agencies will be there. I think we've got about 25 agencies that will be there. Parents can also come. They're doing a mock interview on how not to get a job. how not to interview. And they're also doing a little fashion show on how not to show up for an interview and how to
well,
show
that
up
might
for
be
an
good.
Interview. Well, yeah, which I think, yeah, I would say a lot of people could benefit from that. And then they'll have tables set up similar to what we do at Elderfest, and children and parents can go around. And then that night we have a parents in transition night, which is kind of a roundtable discussion. Usually workforce development is there, ADRC is there, CESA 3 is there. Those are the main presenters. I'm trying to think if there's one more. And we'll talk a little bit about our services. And then they're going to provide some time for parents to really sit down with, like, our disability benefits services and talk one-on-one.
What does the CESA stand for? Dan was just, I know it's an
CESA
educational.
Cooperative Educational Services Agency, yeah. So they work with all the, like, there's a CESA 3, there's a CESA 5, there's a CESA 2. So they have a region of school districts that they work with. And they provide services to those school districts, so
they have to buy into the services there.
Yeah.
But they're also responsible. CESA statewide has a transition coordinator that is responsible again for making sure that those children leaving the school districts do have good programs set up when they enter adulthood. And there has really been a tremendous amount of work in that area. Brian Kinney is the transition coordinator. He's done a lot of work, and he's got a big passion for it, of getting kids out into the secondary schools and getting them employed. Much more push on getting kids employed than just getting them on benefits anymore. And that, I think, is a wonderful thing, because, again, it's back to that. Everybody needs a purpose in life and needs to feel like they've got something to contribute. So.
Any more questions?
Thank you,
Alicia.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
So we will continue to bring in.
We know where your office is now.
All I do is make a phone call or stop in.
Don't come in now, it's a little bit of a mess.
And especially 4:25 on Friday.
Exactly.
All right, we'll go on number 8, the bylaws revision.
There's something about crisis calls. They always come on Friday. We aren't going to go through this because given the time crunch today, in looking through bylaws, I've known for about a while now that we that our bylaws needed revision, but it hasn't been really high up on my priority list. But since we have term limits coming down, I needed to take a look at our bylaws. And one of the things that I noticed was our bylaws and our term limits are not in line with what our Older Americans Act manual says they should be. So I had some conversations with our state consultant who oversees our Older Americans Act and said, I think at some time when aging and disability, and when ADRC came in and merged with the OAA programs, that's when the term limits got mixed up. So the county board members' term limits should be two-year terms, up to 6 years. Citizen board member term limits should actually be three-year terms for two terms. However, we've been doing two-year terms for quite some time now. So I talked to John about that, and he said, well, you know, just look at your bylaws, get it changed, and adjust and go on. I mean, we're not in really any serious trouble over it, but it really needs to be done. So I hadn't looked at the bylaws, and when I did, I had some thoughts as to what I felt would make them read a little bit better. So as you can see, I changed a fair amount. Not really, I think, so much in terms of intent, but just in the way they were organized and addressed the term limits. So I will just pass these out. I'm sending you the old one, which is not marked up at all, and the new one, which is very marked up, because quite frankly, when I was trying to read the marked up one, I thought, well, this is hard to read. So I will propose two different things. You can either take a look at them, and we can talk about them next month, or my other thought was if you wanted Mary Lou to just have a committee of a couple members take a look at them and then bring them back to present to the board, whatever your take is. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time in this meeting.
Does anybody have a suggestion how they'd like that done?
I'd like to see you bring it back to the full committee next month.
Okay.
So hand them out, everybody look at them.
Hand them out, yep. You can just take one of each.
That gives everybody an opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that have been here, they understand it. That gives Dan and Pat some opportunity.
And in that, if I can throw that real quick, see, there was a question I had in here for you.
Laura, did you pass out the amended agenda?
I did not.
Okay.
I apologize. You can just cross off if you would have worked for contract business.
Well, I have.
Another one.
One of the things that I highlighted was, and I'll ask you, Bob, was county employees, it says county employees may not serve on the board unless prior authorization for exceptional circumstances is obtained from the department. I don't know if that even needs to be in here, if we would. I can't imagine we have a county employee. The other one was, oh, that one was not. Elected county officials may not serve as consumer representatives, but that one is fine. I got an answer to that one. So we have to have certain people representing elderly. We have to have certain people representing individuals with disabilities. So they're just saying basically that elected officials can't necessarily counted in that mix, but and then my other question was, when I looked back, we have always re-elected within this forum people for the next term. So when Dave's term is up, we say, you know, we'd like to renew your term. It might now be 4 years, not.
That's okay. As long
I'm just teasing, but
I'll make that motion.
Do they need to be? Can they be reelected here, or does they need to be reappointed by you? Since technically you do appoint people to this board, is it a reappointment or is it a reelection?
I would say they should be appointed by the full county board.
Okay.
I mean, as long as you have someone interested.
So basically,
and this
committee
recommends them.
Yeah, okay. That's what I wanted to make sure.
It needs to be verified by the full county board. That's what we do with unified and library boards and everybody else.
Because when I looked back, I couldn't see that was done, but I don't know that it wasn't either. So I just wanted to clarify that. So I may have to clarify that in here. I'll have to look back and see how I have it worded in there and make sure that we do that from now on.
I'm going to take this there and,
that'd be great.
And give it to Corporation Council.
Yep, that's just fine.
Okay, so the idea is that you look these over and bring them back with any discussion next month. Okay, on to number 9, assistant cook vacancy.
I did run this past Mary Lou because I really needed to get the ad in the paper right
away. And this message. Call me back. ASAP.
There was a time crunch and the paper was holding the space open for me. So Jenny Jessen, our assistant cook, is resigning in our Boscoville site. Our Boscoville site's the only site that we provide an on-site kitchen to. But because of family situations, Jenny needs insurance, and so she took a position with the prison that would give her benefits. She's been working part-time for us as an assistant cook. So we do have that vacancy. I did talk to Mary Lou ahead of time because if we can't get board approval, I can at least get the chair approval to put an ad in the paper, and we needed that to go in pretty quickly. So that vacancy does exist. I just need approval to go ahead and fill that vacancy.
I'd like to make a motion that we go ahead and...
I'll make that motion. Since that'll be my last one.
Is this her last meeting?
No, I think you're
right. I'll second it.
See if I can get her to get a few more.
Any further discussion? I'm okay to fill that position. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay. On to number 10, Neil Foss.
While I'm talking with the ADRC as we're working on this business template, the state side on the OAA program is also big on business and meal and doing costing out and various things too. So they provided us with this big, long Excel spreadsheet this year that we have to do meal costs on, which after I spent, 3 days doing, and I had the same figure I came up with last year in about 5 minutes, so I was a little discouraged by the fact that I had to do all this extra, proving of the information for it. But the one thing that they are doing in terms of our meal costs is splitting it out now between congregate and home delivered, which makes it a little tricky for us just because our meal site managers do both home delivered meals and congregate. So anyway, we did come up with two different costs. We have to establish what our actual costs are for meals every year, because if we have someone who is on family care and continuous is purchasing our services for that, they have to pay the full amount of that cost. So that would include our admin costs, any type of maintenance costs, home delivered stipends, all of that is factored in. Participants pay a suggested donation cost. They don't pay anywhere near the full price. So after this big template that the state had us do, our numbers turned out to be about $10.69 a meal for congregate. And we actually lowered our home delivered, so that might be a benefit to us in terms of this, and $9.86 for home delivered.
Wow, I would have thought it would have been the reverse, higher for home delivered than congregate.
Well, what it is the amount of time that they probably spend is very similar on both of them, and because of the extra meals, we're seeing such a more meals in home delivered, it actually just lowers that cost a little bit. On the one hand, that's good for us in terms of family care because that's always a concern. So if our costs have gone down a little bit, they may be more inclined to put more people on meals because they've taken people off of meals in the past several years, which is really discouraging for us.
Do we have anybody that's taking meals out of that where they deliver it for a week, leave it on your front door?
Oh, Mom. Not, we don't leave them for a week.
I know. Do we have,
you're saying like moms.
Right,
moms,
if we got in.
We did have, I do know offhand of a participant who needed a specialized diet, and we don't provide specialized diets. We just don't have that capability right now. He did receive some from Mom's Meals, but he didn't care for them. But it wasn't the packaging. He was like, he didn't like the specialized diet that he was on, so he didn't care for the meals, and it's like, well, I don't think, so we kind of laughed because it was a low sodium and he wanted salt. I can't blame him, but that was not, So we do present people with those options. So,
what's the suggested donation?
The suggested donation right now is $350. We cannot ask people to contribute a certain amount. We can just tell them what the suggested donation is, and then they have the ability to pay whatever they feel they can afford. They may, some may pay more, some may pay less.
That's for either.
That's for congregate or home delivered, right? Right. But if a person walks into our meal site that is under 60 and wants a meal, they do have to pay the full price. So this time would be the 1069 and 986. And you know, when you tell them 1069, they're like, well,
yeah,
you know, but they don't understand there's a lot more involved in that.
It's pretty high cost, isn't it?
It is.
You go to a restaurant,
it is.
That.
Well, and that's,
yeah.
you know what my feeling is on that.
Yeah,
you know, I think the state really needs to get a hold of making some changes here. But
if you go to McDonald's, you can spend $10 a meal on one person, and you're not getting a balanced meal.
That's right.
You're
yeah.
vegetables,
yeah.
And you're not getting it delivered to you.
Yeah.
As delivered.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are benefits here. And we are trying to look at, quite frankly, our costs will come down eventually. One of the things that I haven't done that I'm going to do now that I've compiled all this information is I will do a meal cost per site. And I think that will be a little bit shocking to you because we have some staff that are grandfathered in. I'll be very honest. We have some staff that were grandfathered into benefits. And so they're receiving, so the costs in those certain meal sites are going to be very, cost per meals are going to be very, very high. And so as, through attrition, as we lose some of those, our costs will be lowered a little bit because new staff coming on will not be eligible for those same benefits.
Ruth and I were just trying to brainstorm before the meeting today of what to do with that Montfort site and how to get people to go there. And so
yeah.
I've got some doors I'm going to go out and knock on and try to drag them in there because
yeah.
the people that go there need it so desperately. And
it's our meal sites for the new members, our congregant meal sites that are at the facilities, and this is a nationwide, it's statewide, have been seeing a decrease where home delivered has been seeing an increase. And my feeling for a long time is that this was a program that was started in the 60s on the war on poverty, and it's sort of kind of stayed an old dinosaur. They've never really updated it very well. And baby boomers are a different breed than, you know, than the generation that are now in their 90s. We're not meeting their needs through the congregate meal sites, and we have to do some things that are different. The state has done, offered some grant monies for revitalization projects, but quite frankly, I think it's been very disappointing. I haven't seen any revitalization projects that have showed a really fabulous increase, other than maybe Madison opened one in a nicer neighborhood in a nicer restaurant, but I also know they pulled away from probably another neighborhood that probably needed that more. So, you know, I understand, but numbers don't necessarily tell the whole story.
Is the Muscadet site down quite a bit today?
Muscadet has a fairly good base, and they do a lot of home delivered as well. So some of our Blue River has a very small congregate with some home delivered. Yeah, we've probably got about three sites that we're going to have to look at and determining whether we continue on or not. I've been hesitant to do that since I came on, but I think realistically we'll have to determine whether we're going to pull the plug on those or not. So I would like approval on the meal cost because we do have to put that information, we have to advertise that information at the meal sites, what the actual cost of the meal is.
Okay, would someone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we...
Shirley makes a motion.
I'll second.
Vicki seconds it. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
So I will get those meal costs by site out as well. And then we're also doing the same thing with transportation. And I didn't bring that today because I thought this might get a little long today. But I will have transportation numbers out for you too. And those actually surprisingly look better than I thought they would. So I was kind of optimistic on those.
Okay, approval of vouchers under number 11. Any question on the vouchers?
The vouchers for new people are in your packet. They look like this.
I guess a question I might have is what happened on March 11th?
What happened on March 11th? That's just the date when checks were issued. And same on on the 18th and same on the 25th. So, yeah, she just puts them all out. That's, we have vouchers go out every week, or accounts payable.
Is there certain, are there certain, I know, you know, the 4th was 6,000 and the 18th was 6,000 and the 25th was 1,000.
Yeah, if you look at those,
and then this one was 32,000.
If you look at our bigger account, the bigger numbers are typically our food accounts. So if you look at Grant Regional Health Center, that's purchased food. We purchase food from them for our meal set.
You only do that once a month, I suppose.
Yes. If you, Orchard Manor would have been a payment for rent.
And that's quarterly.
And that's quarterly. And UW Platteville, again, is a food payment. They do a fair number of our programs as well.
Orchard Manor, we pay them $5,000.
We pay them $20,000.
For rent of what?
We pay them $20,000.
We're on their, this is their building?
Over a quarter, yes it is.
Why don't we tell them to upgrade this building?
We've been down that road.
We're tired. We're moving if they don't give us a better facility.
Mark, brother, I'll send you over after the meeting, Dan, to have that conversation with Carol.
That's food, too.
That's
food distributor.
That's for Boston.
Any other comments on the vouchers?
So, yeah, you'll see. I don't think we've got any other really...
So there's always going to be 1 week a month that's going to be... much higher.
You're always going to see. You're always going to see your highest.
Depending
expenses.
On where they fall. Like this last month, I think I was gone 1 week because my kid was sick forever. I felt like, and so I think some of them got held till the next week.
Welcome to Mother.
Oh my God.
That's what we tell her all the time. Yeah. She's kind of tired of hearing it.
Yeah. Okay. You got everything in the last month.
So I need a motion to approve the vouchers.
I'll make the motion.
Jan makes a motion. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
30 seconds. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the motion. Can you tell me who?
Jan.
Who seconded?
And Shirley.
Okay, thank you.
On to 12, financial report.
Okay. Again, I don't think we've got anything terribly unusual happening. We ended up last year better than I thought we were going to be, so that was good. And I think we're fairly on track. Some of our revenue doesn't come in until later on in the year. A lot of our transportation revenue is quarterly, and Crystal you do a monthly report for
Green County
GWAR, which is our state agency for the OAA funds, so how that's released. And then we also do one, we get reimbursed from Green County for ADRC by sending in monthly expenses as well. So that's kind of where that comes. Just very briefly, if you look at service management, that's sort of our kind of something we can use. It comes out of OAA funds that we use to support the other programs, so it's where some of our admin costs come out of for admin assistance and front desk receptions. I have a little time in there. And then our meals are both our meal programs, home delivered and congregate. Benefit specialist is our elder benefit specialist for people over the age of 60. That comes through Older Americans Act funds as well. Then we have quite a bit of funds that come through the DOT for bus, for our specialized wheelchair van, for our taxi program, and our Dodgeville taxi. And yes, we do run a Dodgeville taxi. I do not know the history behind that, why we're running a taxi in another county, but we do right now.
I think it was gone to a grant that was available. They didn't qualify for it, and we did, so we started it.
And they wanted more of this working together.
Yes, yeah. And there is still a lot of that with transportation. DOT wants it regional. Our TRIPS program is our volunteer driver program that we have. Our family caregivers program is an OAA program as well. And then our ADRC, I think I got them all. The ADRC lumps then information and assistance specialists and disability benefits specialists into that group.
So just to kind of give you a...
Are there any questions on that?
There.
I'll make the motion to accept that report.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, on to 13, reports. Director report.
I couldn't get my report off my computer this morning because, according to IT, we're still having antenna problems out here. So I got that nice little circle that just goes around and around and around. I become more and more frustrated. So it's a very, it looks a little brief because I literally was pulling it up 2 minutes before we were going to start here. So, again, I just hit the highlights, which is what I usually do. We have been extremely busy. It just seems like it's been crazy busy since you all were last here in terms of just people coming in and just a number of things that happen to be happening. We are working with CARE Wisconsin, which will be the new managed care organization, or MCO as they're called. On a contract for meals and transportation. Continuous currently works with us in terms of our Meals on Wheels program and our volunteer driver transportation or wheelchair van transport. So we are working on that contract right now. I have a meeting set up with them on Friday to go over that. Ruth is working on the food bid request, and that was why your agenda got amended, because for some reason, last week I thought it was May. I put it on this agenda. So I guess we were talking so much about the food bids that I just thought we had to review them this month. I don't know what I was thinking. So we will have to look at those next month, because those contracts end July 1st. One of the fun things that we're going to be implementing is we received a grant from the Bader Foundation to implement, it's called a sip and swipe program, which sounds kind of like criminal when I think about it now. it's not the intent. What they're looking at is providing tablets and some training for seniors in different sites. And so we're piloting it in Platteville, because we have two meal sites that are with senior centers, one in Basketball and one in Platteville. And that's where they kind of wanted us to start. So they're going to be providing us with two tablets. And these tablets come loaded with some tutorials on them on how to work a tablet. And we will be looking for some volunteers age 55 and older who kind of just are there to sort of facilitate the training of these tablets. So we'll have some people that are interested in learning how to use a tablet, you know, similar to an iPad, similar to just a great big smartphone anymore. But the swipe comes from the fact that on tablets you often swipe. So they're going to, the tutorials, from what I understand from Ruth, are sort of self-directed, but if anybody has a computer or a smartphone or a tablet, you know that you sometimes swipe wrong and you end up somewhere where you're not supposed to be. So that's where the mentors are going to kind of come into play. The volunteers are just to help people. But they'll go through this training little program on how to run a tablet and just become more proficient on using the internet and using those services that might be online. So it's kind of an exciting thing. And they're actually giving us two tablets, which is really nice. And then what we'll do is we'll pilot it there. And then our thought is, once we pilot it there, then we'll bring it down to Basketball, and we'll do another program down there with it. And hopefully at some point maybe we can get some other more tablets and provide them at some of our meal sites so that people would have access to that.
What are we sipping?
What's that?
What are they sipping?
They're sipping. I hope they're sipping coffee.
I wanted that too.
Yeah,
they might learn how to do that real quick.
If there's an incentive.
No, we didn't name the program. It actually came from the Bader as the Sip and Swipe program. I know, and we were kind of laughing. I didn't think much of it, and then we just had somebody ask me this morning too, like, "What are they sipping and what are they swiping?" And I'm like, "They're thinking swiping this way," but yeah. So, I'm interested. I think it's going to be a good thing. We already have a couple people that are interested, that have a tablet that they've gotten at home and then aren't so sure how to use. So I just got one at home that I'd like to send him to learn how to use his tablet because it drives me crazy. when he got it, I was like, oh, great. So I'll have more work to do in the evenings when you can't get to where you're going.
You know, you really wonder where some of this stuff comes from. We're talking about getting on the wrong thing just the other day. As being the manager of the airport, here comes this whole stack of magazines. Good grief, what am I going to do with these? They were Hustler magazines.
Ow!
To the airport manager. How did I even get that? There wasn't even a picture of an airplane.
Did you check?
But they were rather nice. But where did they come from?
As far as lean, we're trying to work on, this past year I've been trying to get our transportation, we have to do quarterly reports for transportation, and it feels like a lot of them, which we actually do have to do about six of them on a quarterly basis, or I have to. So we've been trying to get systems in place for tracking that information, that so it's easily accessible and correct and accurate, since we're big on that. And one of the things that we just found out the other day is we need to change some maintenance procedures. So that's kind of what we're doing in terms of Lean. For those that don't know, Lean is a county initiative that we're doing. It was actually, we took a 16-week course, Crystal and I did, along with Bob, through Southwest Tech to go over. Lean is like it originated in manufacturing, mm-hmm. but it's looking at your processes and trying to find more effective and efficient ways to do things so that you, in turn, then provide more customer satisfaction. So we've done a number of different projects. We are still working on the nutrition reporting. We may never get through that one, though. and transportation has been one, too. So, again, working with CARE Wisconsin on the Memorandum of Understanding. I have that going on today. Again, just how they'll work with us. That Memorandum of Understanding includes Unified and Social Services as well, so we're all meeting together on that. I talked a little bit about the business plan template that's going to be implemented through the ADRC. The template is designed to then help us use that data to make a business plan. So Mary Mesra will probably be talking about that more at the regional level since we're regional, she's actually the one that will have to implement a business plan, but usually it's in conjunction with all of the directors. And then I did take a grant to the Grant County Board yesterday. I got notified last week by our DOT that there was that the FTA had a discretionary some discretionary funding available for grants, and they had a very quick turnaround time. We actually had to let the DOT know Monday whether we'd be interested in it. So I literally had no time to even bring it here. So I called Bob and said, can I get it on the agenda for the Grant County Board? And he very graciously said yes. So what it is, and I'm not, I apologize because I'm not as familiar with transportation funding. I'm working my way through it, but so the FTA has money, this discretionary money, it's new money, and they're setting it aside so that people can either improve their capital equipment, purchase new capital equipment, or purchase new facilities for buses. There's also something to do with clean air and low emission buses and things like that. So it's a number of things. But it also, at the time, I didn't think it was for our buses, but when I called DOT, I found out it would also work for our taxi program and that we were eligible and we could use it to replace the taxi. Since I just had my taxi driver in like 2 weeks ago saying, you know, I think we're going to need a new taxi pretty soon. We've had a lot of expenses with that, and it's like 7 or 8 years old now. I am looking at it for that. It's a national grant, so it goes out to all the states, and the state has to send in a consolidated grant application for for all the rural programs. So I'm assuming the big bus programs of Milwaukee and Madison do their own individual, but the rural programs all send it in through a consolidated grant with the state. So we have to send all the information to the state on, you know, why we need to replace the vehicle, what the vehicle will do out here in terms of meeting transportation needs. The Grant County Taxi currently serves Lancaster 2 days a week and Boscobel and Fenimore 2 half-days a week. And it's used a lot, so it really would be great if we could get through. We, according to the DOT, they have really no experience with this grant and whether we'll get it or not, but you don't get it if you don't ask. So that turnaround time has to be all to them by the 29th of April. So a very brief turnaround time. So I'll be working on that yet this week and trying to get that ready to go. And then again, working on those transportation and those site cost templates. So it's been a very busy time.
You should have committee approval then to move forward with that.
Okay. Can I do it off of my report?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. So
I just have a question. Come October, I mean, looking ahead, and with Medicare D again, and where we're at with changes, are we going to have, we filled up so fast last year, are we looking ahead to being able to get...
Actually, Marcia and I met on that about 2 months ago. We're not going to get any additional really help with it. I mean, they're not probably going to provide us with another staff person here. That just doesn't happen. There's
volunteers
some money.
Or something?
Yeah. The problem with the volunteers is that the training is so time intensive. We don't find people willing to necessarily do that. And it's so little bit more complicated. But we have been talking with other offices how they've improved their efficiency there. And Marcia and I had that conversation just about a month ago. We're going to try to get people, our customers that we know utilize us almost every single year, we're going to try to get a hold of them prior, like a couple months, maybe starting in end of July, August,
okay,
to get us their drug list so that we can get either volunteers then in to just run the drug list. And then when they come in, if they have any minor updates, we can do that very quickly. But if we can get those drug lists in and get them in, that will help us ahead of time. Because what they can do is then run the plans ahead of time. So when they come in for the appointment, the plans will be done. That's our thought.
When do those plans make changes in their plans? Do you know?
The drug plans?
Yes.
Most everything occurs about the same time as Part D. So, you know, a lot of that changes all about the same time. But, I can tell you straight out, we will never have, you know, we just have so many people in this county that there's just no way that we'll ever, we're always going to fill up. But, you know, as long as we can get the ones, the problem is, how do I say this? The problem is there's a lot of people who really need to have Marcia walk them through that drug plan and help them do that and understand it. And there's a lot of people that probably could be taught online how to do that, you know, to do that on their own and review those drug plans. So
would a class ahead of time be advantageous?
We did kind of offer that last year that we had a computer here if people wanted to use it. We didn't find that really very useful.
Nobody
so
did.
It is still something that we are considering. She did do some presentations, and she's been doing some all along and talking about that. So, you know, and what usually happens with it is usually we have people that have kind of ignored the fact that they got a letter saying that, you know, their drug coverage is changing, and then all of a sudden their drug coverage changes. And they find that out when they go to the pharmacy. And then they're calling in a panic, we need help here. So.
Well, I just know it always throws an awful lot of Marcia.
Yeah, it does.
All
and
at once.
You know, I've talked to other directors about it because I think it's a crazy process. But I have not, I mean, it is just their season for chaos, I guess. So, you know, there's the problem is that it's only between October and December. And what happens in October is there's often issues with the database by the feds. There's always problems with that. So we usually have to delay 2 weeks because they often find glitches or something's not running right or it's not spitting out what it should. It never fails. It takes about 2 weeks to get it up and running well.
So I guess it's just the nature of the beast, but you saw the problems with Obamacare when that first came out. They tried to get that database up and running, and that has problems. Well, it seems to be a problem with Part D every year. So. But yeah, but we are trying to work on that to try at least maximize how many appointments we can get. We did have a much better process, I think, last year. And we got people in, I think, fairly efficiently. But, you know, we can only do so much, too. There are other things. Medigap Hotline is out there that can help people walk through that process. People just like Marshall.
Yeah.
Well, it's always better to have that physical.
Right. And a lot of people just have, and they have a real comfort zone with her. They really do. So they just, you know. But, again, that may change because the new generation of retired people that are coming up are going to not be afraid of that computer and doing some of that on their own as maybe.
You still have the computer here, right?
Yeah, we have a public computer out in our reception area. So.
Okay, anything further in there?
Nope.
You should have a motion to
allow
Lori to fill out the application. And when it is received, she did say yesterday that it's a 20% match.
It is a 20% match.
She has funds available in a trust account for vehicles, so you'll have the match.
I'll make that motion.
She makes a motion for Lori to continue working on that. Do we hear a second?
I'll second.
Dan seconds that. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passed. Proceed.
Thank you.
Lori, I got one question.
Yeah.
Going back to the transportation thing with the Dodgeville taxi we provide, do they pay us? Do we get
money to run that.
Not from Dodgeville.
Yes. Actually, the city of Dodgeville and the county both puts in some local share there. Grant County does not put in any local share to that taxi.
Is it enough? Should we charge them more?
That
occurred before Lori took over.
Yeah.
And so far, the revenue meets the expenses. We have not had an issue with that yet. So, we get some DOT money, and then we get some city and county funds for that. So it hasn't been an issue. I think at some point, Iowa County might consider. I think there's more transportation opportunities out there, and things are becoming more regionalized.
I think they're thinking about trying to take it over because they do see
the need,
some return on investment, and need for local control.
Yeah.
But at that time, Gail was looking at other opportunities.
And if they would want to expand it, you know, we're not going to expand it right now because we just meet the expenses. So it's coming pretty close. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm quite sure if I went to the county board and said, did you want to kick in some money to expand in Iowa County? I don't think you're going to go for that. So that conversation has been had. And I have no issue with that if they decide at some point that it makes more sense for that. To me, that's not an issue. So,
But it the way I was explained to me is that it went back to a grant opportunity to get the original vehicle. Mm-hmm. They couldn't qualify, or they didn't have the opening to make that, and so Gail jumped on and we're in that range.
Gail
Mason was the predecessor.
Yeah. So I don't have a lot, you know, a history with that. But I have brought it up to Becky, who is the ADRC director in the past, that if I'd be open for that discussion if we think. We meet as a transportation committee. Again, DOT wants everything kind of regionalized, and we have to show a regional plan. So we meet with the other directors, including Richland County, on a every other month basis. So, and Southwest Regional Planning is a part of that as well. So, yeah, I have no problem if they decide down the line that they can somehow fund that or are interested in that, of looking into that. So it's not... Ken is the staff person over there, and he's pretty low maintenance, so it's not too big of a deal most of the time. It pretty much runs just fine, but it is just a little odd quirk in our
Okay, review and award, that comes back into us next month, correctly?
Yes, and you've got your program reports. So that just kind of gives you some of the data that we're doing in terms of cases, information in the systems, family caregivers, and transportation. So the transportation ones are taxi and bus are based on the first quarter, so I just did those reports. So
how many employees do you have here at ADRC?
Oh, gosh, I was really hoping you wouldn't ask me that.
Ballpark.
I'm never good at counting those up. So we've got about... We've got 10 staff here in the office, and then we've got 10 meal site staff that are not full-time. We've got 3 van drivers.
I think it was about 30, 35 without filling.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of substitute staff that fill in on a daily basis, too. So, yeah, it can fluctuate on any week.
Anything else to come before us?
Yeah. Didn't we get an email message from Mary Mezer about the May meeting?
Yes. Or not the,
no,
May,
the April.
The April.
The April.
Being,
yeah,
canceled.
April.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was canceled.
Next
so
week. That's the regional?
That's
the regional.
That's
the regional canceled.
Okay.
I was going to ask when the next one was.
Yeah.
We kind of get together and carpool
okay.
for that.
That's fine.
That's an option
sure.
that you would like.
Darlington is moving their offices. Typically, that meeting is in Darlington. And Darlington is moving their offices to their
going
new
out to the old Bachelor.
Yeah.
Financial.
Oh.
Are we going to have 4 people going to regional?
Well, Mike is off, right?
No, Mike
off.
Is no longer on, so it will be
oh,
you
okay.
and Mary Lou and
Pat.
Pat.
Okay.
The new regional.
So, and if nothing further to come before us, so make a motion to adjourn.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Yeah, make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
Couple seconds.
We're always fighting.
The next meeting will be May 18th.
If you, I gave you some information
yeah.
to start programs too, but if you would like to meet further to talk about anything, I would be happy to meet with you and sit down and talk further. But we will be having some staff come on, each month just to talk about what's going on.
That's good.
That's very informative.